This series was originally released as a Wondery Plus exclusive in 2021. Join Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app to listen to Business Wars early and ad-free. Wondery. 1958, the South Bronx, New York. Three flatbed trailer trucks rumble through the gates of the Senator Frozen Products ice cream plant and pull up by the loading bay. The truckers haul waist-high supermarket freezers off the trailers, piling them onto the asphalt. As they do, a brawny man with an Errol Flynn mustache races out of the plant. He's Reuben Mattis, the 40-something boss of Senator Frozen Products.
"Why are you bringing my freezers back? There must be some mistake,"
one of the truckers replies.
"There's no mistake, Mr. Mattis. The supermarket that hired us now stocks Meadow Gold, not your ice cream. Your freezers ain't needed no more."
The news cuts Mattis like a knife. He spent $200,000 buying these freezers. They only went into the supermarket stores 2 weeks ago.
"But the supermarket said if we buy and maintain the freezers, they'll stock us." "I don't know what to tell you, sir. All I've been told is that Meadow Gold gave the supermarket an advanced rebate, so they're back in, and you're out."
"Advanced rebate? That's some fancy name for a bribe. Call it whatever you want, Mr. Mattis, but the facts don't change. My job's to return these freezers, and that's what me and the boys are going to do. You got a problem with that, take it up with my superiors."
Mattis watches helpless as the freezers pile up. When his mother started Senator Frozen Products back in the 1920s, business was simple. Make ice cream, then sell it off push carts to corner grocers. Now, supermarkets call the shots, and they want ice cream at low prices that only the biggest dairies can offer. Mattis hoped his freezers would save his business. He was wrong. He slinks back into the plant, past the workers who've watched everything through the windows. One worker rushes over.
Mr. Mattis, you gotta come up with something or else we're finished."
Mattis scowls.
"What do you think I am, a magician?"
Mattis storms into his office and slams the door. But he knows the worker's right. He needs a new product his rivals can't copy or undercut. Something no supermarket could refuse. And he needs it before the big dairies steamroll him out of existence.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts. From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. On the last episode, Ben & Jerry's brought its chunky treats to Boston, only to wind up in the crosshairs of gourmet ice cream king Häagen-Dazs.
Now, we're turning back time to see how Häagen-Dazs creator Ruben Mattis secured his crown. Born just before World War I in the East European city of Grodno, Mattis had a hard start in life. His father died on the front lines. At age 4, he survived on garbage scraps. After the war came communist oppression and growing anti-Semitism. His family immigrated to America, settled in Brooklyn, and began making ice cream. Now, Mattis must fight to survive again. This is Episode 2, The Ice Cream Castle. ...1959, the South Bronx, the Senator Frozen Products plant. Ruben Mattis paces the cramped office, muttering to himself. His wife, Rose, who's also the company bookkeeper, glances up from the ledger as he snatches the stapler off her desk.
Ruben, would you sit down or go outside? I can't concentrate with you buzzing round like a fly.
Mattis sits on the edge of Rose's desk and fiddles with a stapler.
Huh. I've got it.
Got what?
The answer. The answer. I know how to beat the big dairies.
Rose sits back. Ever since that supermarket kicked their freezers out last year, he's been thinking about how to respond.
You know, everyone's marching to the supermarket drum. It's all about price. Who can make the cheapest ice cream? Who can give supermarkets the best incentives? We should go the opposite way.
What do you mean?
I'm thinking a new ice cream that costs 75 cents a pint.
Rose nearly falls off her chair. In 1959, a pint of ice cream cost less than 15 cents.
75 cents a pint. What kind of wacko's gonna pay that for some ice cream?
This won't be just some ice cream. This will be the richest, creamiest, smoothest ice cream you ever tasted anywhere in your entire life. Everyone's packing ice cream with air, stabilizers, colors, artificial flavors. We should go the other direction. We use the best natural ingredients. No more vanillin, only real vanilla. The high price will tell people it's the best. The taste will justify the cost.
Rose crosses her arms.
Those ingredients will cost us a fortune.
Rose, we're too small to win a price war. This is our way out of this mess. I'm telling you, a high-margin product so superior no one will dare challenge it. So come on, what do you think?
Rose eyes the dwindling sales figures in her ledger and uncrosses her arms.
Well, anything's got to be better than what we're doing now.
Mattis throws himself into making his ultimate ice cream. He whisks his eggs into the usual milk, cream, and sugar to create a custardy French-style base. He ups the butter fat and dials back the air until his mix has twice the fat and half the air of standard ice cream. The result is thick, velvety, and slow to melt. He shuns additives and seeks out the finest ingredients, from Madagascan vanilla to Brazilian coffee beans. He refines his recipe over and over, seeking symmetry between the indulgent creamy taste, delicate aromas, and smooth texture. Then, he fine-tunes production and distribution so his creation will reach customers at the optimal temperature of minus 23 degrees Fahrenheit. After months of work, his gourmet dessert is ready. All he needs now is a brand image to match. 1960, Brooklyn. In the Mattis family kitchen, Rose beats cake batter with a handheld mixer. As she beats the batter, Ruben sits at the table, smoking cigarettes and flicking through a dog-eared Danish dictionary. He spots the Danish word for sugar and tries it out for size.
Sugar. Sugar. Useless.
Rose stops whisking.
Maybe you should just stop pretending it's Danish.
No, People have to believe it's an exotic luxury. Old-world sophistication will do that.
Mattis starts pacing the room.
The name must feel right when spoken like a...
He spots the box of Duncan Hines cake mix Rose is using.
Like Duncan Hines?
Mattis races back into his seat and starts scribbling down ideas and muttering to himself.
Duncan Hines. Hines, Duncan. H plus D. Yes, but Danish. Hagar Duncan. Hagar Duskin. No, maybe Hagen Dus. Hagen Das. Hagen Das. Ah!
Mattis leaps up, grabs Rose, and gives her a kiss.
Mwah! Hagen Das. That's it, Rose. That's it. Just one thing missing. An umlaut.
Mattis grabs his notepad and adds two dots over the first A in Hagendaz. He doesn't know there are no umlauts in Danish. Rose peers at the name of their new ice cream.
What does it mean?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. But who cares? It's perfect.
In late 1960, Hagendaz goes on sale in New York City in three flavors, vanilla, chocolate, and coffee. Mattis sends teams onto the streets to hand out samples and convince gourmet delis to stock it. For people used to bland ice cream, it's a shock. Some think the specks of real vanilla are dirt. Others mistake its thick, smooth consistency for paint. The price drops jaws, but the taste always wins out. Aided by its high price, quality, and word-of-mouth promotion, Hagen-Dazs gains a cult following among well-off New Yorkers. But when word spreads beyond the Big Apple, Mattis finds himself in a quandary. In the 60s, most ice cream reaches stores via warehouses and on the way there often thaws and freezes several times. This melting and refreezing creates tiny ice crystals that damage the texture. That's okay for cheap ice cream for kids, but Mattis knows it's unacceptable for a high-end product aimed at grown-ups. So he builds his own distribution network from the ground up. He spends years recruiting fans and ambitious entrepreneurs to deliver Häagen-Dazs direct to stores in refrigerated trucks. It's expensive, but safeguards the quality that justifies the high price. By the mid-70s, Häagen-Dazs is available nationwide. Demand for the cult ice cream is starting to snowball. It's 1975, and at a trade show in New York, Häagen-Dazs' new sales chief, Kevin Hurley, mans the exhibition stand. He's burly, with gelled back hair, and he's about to get a crash course in how fanatical people get about Häagen-Dazs. A middle-aged woman in a green dress corners him.
Oh, I love Häagen-Dazs. I love Häagen-Dazs.
That's great.
It's better than sex with my husband.
Hurley blushes. To his relief, another woman who's been eavesdropping steps in to talk to the woman with the disappointing husband.
I take it you know who brought Häagen-Dazs to America.
No. Who?
Frank Sinatra. He found the recipe in Denmark.
Hurley interrupts.
Actually, ladies, that's wrong. It was created here in the Bronx.
The two women look at Hurley with disgust. The one who told the Sinatra story jabs her finger at him.
Who are you trying to fool? As if Häagen-Dazs came from the Bronx.
It's true. My boss created...
I won't listen to this nonsense a moment longer.
Me neither.
The Bronx? I know.
As the women leave, Reuben Mattis's 33-year-old daughter, Doris, arrives with two cups of coffee.
Here's your coffee.
Thanks. You won't believe what just happened. Some woman claimed Frank Sinatra created Häagen-Dazs. I told her the truth, but she refused to listen.
You'll get used to it. The stories change, but people go crazy for Dad's ice cream.
Hurley thinks for a second. He knows Doris wants to start her own business.
Doris, I've been in ice cream for years, and I've never seen people this obsessed. You know, you should open a Häagen-Dazs shop and sell it by the cone. People will flock to it.
Doris embraces the idea. In November 1976, she opens the first Häagen-Dazs shop in Brooklyn. It draws customers like yellow jackets at a picnic. Encouraged, she opens a second in Manhattan. And then hits on the idea of using franchising to build a national chain. There's just one roadblock in the way. Summer, 1977. The Häagen-Dazs plant, the South Bronx. In the office, Doris and Reuben Mattis are at each other's throats.
You're jealous, Dad. You never thought my store would work, but I proved you wrong, and you can't stand it.
Fine. I was wrong, but franchising means surrendering control. How can you manage hundreds of independent stores?
By delegating, something you'd never understand.
You'll lose control over the quality.
Quality? You're the one selling Häagen-Dazs in bulk to scoop shops with no style, like those downtown hippie stores in the West Village.
They've been loyal customers from the early days. They helped build Häagen-Dazs.
Dad, that was then. This is now. Häagen-Dazs is about luxury. You should stop selling to them. I can build a chain of nice, clean stores and make us a fortune. You know how much ice cream I sell.
Mattis turns away. He can't deny Doris's success. Her two New York City stores are selling $50,000 of Häagen-Dazs a week and lifting sales in nearby groceries. If she can replicate that success nationally, Häagen-Dazs sales will go supernova. He turns back to Doris.
I know, but I also know what it's like to run a business. It consumes you. It takes over your life. You're my daughter. You shouldn't have to work like your mother and I did. We had nothing. For us, it was the only way. You don't have to do this.
Maybe I want to do this. You ever think of that? I was born with ice cream in my veins. This is my chance to build something just like you and Mom.
Mattis looks at his feet. He hates confrontations, and Doris won't budge.
Fine. Do what you want. I'll stay out of your way.
With her father on board, Doris sells franchises fast. Dozens of Häagen-Dazs shops spring up across New York and then spread nationwide. And every time one opens, demand for Häagen-Dazs jumps. Sales hit $30 million a year and keep climbing. But not everyone's pleased. ...1979, Woodbridge, New Jersey. In Reuben Mattis's office in Häagen-Dazs's vast new automated factory, ice cream distributor Richie Smith piles on the pressure.
I just want to buy Häagen-Dazs in bulk to sell to scoop shops on my routes. You sell more, I sell more, they sell more. Come on, what's not to like?
Mattis squirms.
I'm sorry, but we got our own scoop shops now. We don't want to supply competitors.
The 36-year-old distributor frowns. Every store he supplies wants Häagen-Dazs. The money's on the table, but Mattis won't let him take it. But as a veteran of New York City's cutthroat ice cream trade, Smith knows Mattis hates confrontations.
Reuben, either you sell me Häagen-Dazs or I'll launch a luxury ice cream that'll beat yours.
Reuben raises an eyebrow. Häagen-Dazs has been on sale unchallenged for 19 years. He believes his ice cream is unbeatable.
You think you can better my ice cream?
I don't bluff.
Come on, cut the theatrics. I'm not selling you Häagen-Dazs.
Smith rises from his chair.
Alright, have it your way. But believe me, you're gonna regret this.
Mattis created Häagen-Dazs to be an impenetrable ice cream castle, a frozen fortress of a product that no competitor would ever assault, let alone defeat. But now, Smith's going to test his defenses to the max.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind. It's 1979, and in a Manhattan restaurant, Erhard Sommer looks at the bowl of ice cream that's just been put in front of him.
What's this? I didn't order dessert.
Sommer's dining companion, Richie Smith, interrupts.
You didn't. I did.
Sommer looks at the New York ice cream man. He's been wondering all night why Smith asked him to dinner. This must be the reason. Sommer is a world-class German chef who's catered for royals and presidents, and Smith wants his help. Smith gestures at the ice cream.
Try some.
Sommer scoops a spoonful into his mouth.
Well, do you like it?
No, I do not. Icy texture, bland flavor. I prefer Häagen-Dazs.
Yeah, me too. No one makes better ice cream, right? Well, I'm an experienced chef, so I can.
Smith smiles.
Wanna prove it to me?
Together, Sommer and Smith raid the Häagen-Dazs playbook to create a direct rival. Like its inspiration, their recipe contains more butterfat and less air than the average ice cream and uses all natural ingredients. Smith brands it as a Swedish ice cream and gives it a name adorned with an umlaut, Frusenglaja. The only break with a Häagen-Dazs blueprint is the packaging. Instead of the cardboard pints used by Häagen-Dazs, Frusenglaja is sold in round white plastic containers with screw-top lids. In April 1980, Frusenglaja launches. Within days, Häagen-Dazs sues, claiming unfair competition, and urges the courts to banish it from stores. June 1980, the U.S. District Court, Manhattan.
Judge Kevin Duffy eyeballs the two men in his courtroom. On the plaintiff's side is Häagen-Dazs's 67-year-old creator, Ruben Mattis. At the defendant's table is Frusenglage's Richie Smith. Judge Duffy clears his throat and delivers his decision.
For a preliminary injunction, the case must have merit, and it must be clear the plaintiff will suffer irreparable harm without an injunction. On both counts, Häagen-Dazs has fallen woefully short.
Mattis glances to his right and sees the smile spreading on Smith's face. The judge continues.
Häagen-Dazs claims the defendant violated its unique Scandinavian marketing theme. Such a theme cannot be trademarked. The product names are clearly different. The containers distinct. Umlauts are not a basis to claim infringement.
Mattis sinks into his chair. But the judge isn't done yet.
Häagen-Dazs also claims Frusenglage seeks to deceive the public into thinking its ice cream is Scandinavian. Even if that's true, Häagen-Dazs gives people the same impression. So if Frusenglage is guilty of such deception, it follows that Häagen-Dazs is too. In sum, this meritless request for a preliminary injunction is denied.
Frusenglage's courtroom victory inspires a rush of copycats who want to take a bite out of the fast-growing gourmet ice cream market Häagen-Dazs created. Store freezers fill up with expensive ice creams with faux European names like Alpenzauber, Perschnow, and La Glace de Paris. Mattis built the super premium ice cream market store by store, distributor by distributor. Why should he let these pretenders ride on his coattails? But the imitators are relentless. They pitch ice cream carts outside Häagen-Dazs shops and buy their way into supermarkets. They shower shoppers with money-back guarantees and sneak into stores to stab the pints of rivals with pencils. They even hitch rides on the same delivery trucks as Häagen-Dazs. Häagen-Dazs hits back by pressuring its distributors to dump rival brands. Few distributors push back. Häagen-Dazs owns 70% of the gourmet ice cream market, and no one wants to lose that many sales. But Mattis is nearing 70, and he knows that winning this war will require big bucks. So in July 1983, he sells Häagen-Dazs to food conglomerate Pillsbury for $80 million. The new owners are just as determined as Mattis to kill the copycats. Early 1984, Häagen-Dazs headquarters, Woodbridge, New Jersey. Sales manager Jim Richards scans the latest sales report from Boston and frowns. Sales are up, but market shares down. He combs the data and spots the problem. Something called Ben & Jerry's is making inroads. He phones Häagen-Dazs's Boston distributor.
Paul's distributor is Chuck Green speaking.
Chuck, it's Jim at Häagen-Dazs. You know who carries this Ben & Jerry's brand in your territory?
It's us.
What? They're on our trucks?
Relax. You're a bunch of small-timers from Vermont. Also, these aren't your trucks. They're ours.
The Mattis family built the distribution network you're part of from nothing, but now you're helping some opportunists ride on our back?
Come on. It's not like that.
Well, it sure looks like it. I'm fighting a war here. Everywhere I look, there's imitators crawling out of the walls. I need loyal distributors. Now, either you drop Ben & Jerry's or we find someone who has our back. You got it?
Yeah. Loud and clear.
Richards figures that'll be the last time Häagen-Dazs will need to worry about Ben & Jerry's. But Häagen-Dazs is about to discover that for two small-town hippies, Ben & Jerry pack a hell of a punch. On the next episode, Ben & Jerry beat on the doughboy. Frusenglage's Richie Smith identifies a new target, and Häagen-Dazs broadens its horizons.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. From Wondery, this is episode 2 of Häagen-Dazs versus Ben & Jerry's for Business Wars. A quick note about recreations you've been hearing. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said. Those scenes are dramatizations, but they're based on historical research. If you'd like to read more about Reuben and Rose Mattis, check out The Emperors of Ice Cream by Rose Mattis. I'm your host, David Brown. Tristan Donovan wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Edited and produced by Emily Frost. Voice acting by Michelle Phillippe. Sound design by Kyle Randall. Our associate producer is Kate Young. Our producer is Dave Schilling. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.